Fear, said Kelly Emmons. What evidence do you have? He demanded. This Roberto goon was working for al-Bashir, Emmons said, sitting tensely on the front 3 inches of her chair. Al-Bashir didn't use any other driver when he was in Houston. So? Roberto was the muscle. He probably killed Larson. The Astro employee who committed suicide? Nacho asked through a mouthful of burrito. It wasn't suicide. Roberto murdered him. Prove it. Emmons's blue-green eyes snapped at him. Redheads in their Irish temper, Chavez thought. Okay, she said slowly. We have his voice print from that phony message he left on Larson's answering machine. We need to find him and get a voice match from him. Still playing the devil's advocate, Chavez replied, We don't know where he is, and even if we did, we don't have anything to hold him on. He jumped bail on the assault charge. Local rep, not our jurisdiction. He's probably fled the state, gone back to L.A. Chavez chewed thoughtfully, then said, Probably. That makes him a fugitive, doesn't it? Interstate. That's our jurisdiction, isn't it? Chavez had to grin at her earnestness. Kelly, do you think for half a microsecond that the suits upstairs are going to okay a manhunt for a guy who's jumped bail on a measly assault charge? Emmons said immediately, Nacho, you could phone the L.A. office and ask them to look for him. Yeah, L.A.'s so small that one particular Hispanic guy will be dead easy to find. Come on, it can't hurt to ask. He's got those gang tattoos according to his sheet. That'll help, won't it? Putting the remains of his burrito on his desk, Chavez asked, Wait, back up a minute. Why are you so interested in Roberto? Because he murdered Larson, maybe Tenney as well. And you think if we nail him, he'll roll on whoever hired him? Right. Al-Bashir. The man's probably a terrorist. He's the one who sabotaged Astro's spaceship, and he hired Roberto to cover his tracks. How do you know that? He was part owner of the tanker that blew up beneath the Golden Gate Bridge, Nacho. And the other tanker, in Florida? She shook her head. Different company. But I bet if we keep digging, we'll find he had a hand in that one, too. Maybe, Chavez admitted. But what of it? He owns a chunk of Tricontinental Oil, too. Does that make him a terrorist? Hell, they're funding Astro Corporation and the Power Satellite Project. Emmons said nothing. It's too thin, Kelly, said Chavez. You don't have anything except your suspicions. There's no real evidence at all.
The voice print.
Well, that might be useful, Chavez agreed. If we had Roberto and could match him to it.
So try to find him.
With a patient sigh, Chavez said, I suppose I could call a guy I know in the L.A. office, but I don't think anything will come of it. Hell, Roberto could be in Hong Kong for all we know. Emmons nodded glumly. It was very thin, she agreed silently. We're just spinning our wheels trying to find Roberto. Al-Bashir's the one we're after, and I've got to figure out a way to get to him.
Baikonur Cosmodrome, Kazakhstan. Welcome to Purgatory, said Yuri Vasilyevich Nikolaev jovially. He wore a heavy overcoat and a fur hat squashed down on his thick eyebrows. His breath made clouds in the chill air. The two men who had just alit from the wearily chuffing old train looked around uneasily. As far as the eye could see, the land stretched away, flat, brown, and dusty. The sky was enormous, bright blue, cloudless. They were both bundled in thickly padded coats. One wore a woolen watch cap, the other was hatless. The wind whipping in from the arid wasteland blew what was left of his thinning hair.
You come on good day, Nikolaev
said as the two others hefted their travel bags and followed him toward the train's baggage car, where their equipment was being unloaded.
Fine weather. Maybe spring will arrive after all.
Nikolaev spoke in thickly accented English, the only language that all three men understood. The other two said hardly a word as they toted the bulky loads of equipment to the minibus Nikolaev had waiting for them. They allowed no one to touch their packages, not even the Russian cosmonaut. Gilly Williamson coughed as he climbed into the ice-cold minibus.
Dust in me throat,
he said, half apologetically.
Much dust, said Nikolaev, nodding sympathetically.
Clambering into the driver's seat, he pointed skyward.
Soon we will be above it all.
Williamson's face was a map of Ireland. Pale skin, green eyes, light brown hair that fell boyishly across his forehead. But his face was old, aged beyond his years. His eyes were guarded, suspicious. Born in bloody Belfast, at age 3 he had been orphaned and nearly killed himself by a car bomb that had been set off in a crowded shopping street. By the time he was old enough to go to university, he was an expert wiring man for an offshoot group of the IRA. The organization helped to pay for his schooling, but once he graduated with an engineer's degree, he left Ireland for good and built electronic systems for a major American aerospace firm. Then the company had been bought out in a hostile takeover, and Williamson was laid off. Worse, a routine physical for another firm that was about to hire him revealed he had lung cancer. He was unemployable. That was when a former IRA man contacted him and told him about a job that was available, very hush-hush. At first, Williamson was puzzled. What would an ex-IRA man be doing working for the bloody government? Soon enough, Gilly discovered this was not a government job. Far from it. For nearly a year, he had trained for this job in space. He couldn't help feeling nervous about flying into orbit, but he was determined not to let anyone see his fear. After all, why should a man diagnosed with terminal lung cancer be afraid of flying into orbit? The third man of the team was Malfoud Bouchachi, a slim, balding, dour Algerian engineer who had helped to devise the plan for destroying the Golden Gate Bridge. Slightly older than Williamson, Bouchachi was a veteran of several terrorist strikes. Possessed of iron self-control, cold and calculating, he trusted no one, not even this Russian who was supposed to fly them up to the Yankee power satellite. Nikolaev chattered happily as he drove them and their equipment in the minibus from the train station toward the wooden barracks where they would be quartered until their flight.
Not a luxury hotel, he warned them, but toilets work most of the time, and food is passable. You get the joke? Passable.
He laughed by himself. Once they cleared the train depot, they could see the Cosmodrome's rows of gantry cranes standing against the empty sky. Steel latticework towers, silent, rusting.
My grandfather helped to build those, Nikolaev shouted over the grumble of the minibus's engine, pointing as he drove along the rutted road with one hand. Back in Khrushchev's time, this was busy place. Spaceport to the universe, let me tell you.
The Irishman and the Algerian said nothing, simply gaped at the long rows of rusting towers.
Now not so busy, Nikolaev went on. Government doesn't have money for space anymore. Private companies, maybe sometimes. Not much, though.
Williamson said, our people are paying quite a lot for this flight. And Bouchachi thought, quite a lot, considering that this will be a one-way mission. Dinners with al-Bashir ought to be pleasant, April thought. Yet she always felt tense near him, wary. The best restaurant in Lamar wasn't all that much for a man of the world like him, she supposed, but he gave every appearance of enjoying his steak and never let the conversation go dull. At least once a week they dined together. Sometimes they went dancing afterward, although it wasn't easy to find a place where they played anything other than country and western stomps. April enjoyed the attention, and al-Bashir never got grabby or demanding afterward. She would kiss him goodnight at the door of her apartment building, and that was it. He didn't even try to get her to invite him upstairs to her apartment. Yet there was something in those dark brown eyes of his, some secret amusement or anticipation that he wasn't sharing with her. Does he really like me? April wondered. Or is he just dating me to find out more about what Dan's doing? It can't be that, she told herself. Dan's given him free rein to go everywhere and talk to anybody he wants to. For weeks, April puzzled over the situation. An American guy would have made his move long before this, she knew. And from all she had heard about Arabs, they treated women like possessions. Yet al-Bashir was outwardly gentle and pleasant.
a good